Some live music here in our studio on Live and Local on FM 90.9. The show is your connection to local performances. I'm Kevin Kelly. And the instrumentalists we heard are Mike Compton on the mandolin, Tom Foe on banjo, Sam Payne on guitar, and Charlie Harris on the bass. You're the one name I didn't write down, Charlie, and I thought, oh, that's because I know Charlie's name, and I almost, almost didn't. And sort of a little live jam session here, which is part of the point of today's show. A week ago, I talked with Mike Compton on the phone, and we aired, and he's just remembering that now, and we aired that as a part of, I think, last Tuesday's program, because he actually had a couple of gigs in our area yesterday, really. One was a radio gig in WGLT in Normal. And the other one, it was in Bloomington at the Coffee Hound. But he's with us today because he is going to be participating as sort of a special guest of the Urbana Hootenanny, which happens every Monday night in downtown Urbana at the Rose Bowl Tavern, starting at around 8 o'clock and going till, I guess, whenever you end. Sam Payne is the organizer or co-organizer of that, still with Dustin Norder.
That's right.
Yep, and so that happens every week, and I guess whoever shows up, shows up. Plus, there's a core of people. Is that still the accurate description?
Pretty accurate. Kind of a rotating cast of characters.
Of dozens.
And the rotating cast consists of who specifically and or who generally?
Well, I'm always there. Dustin's always there. Charlie here is usually there. We get a variety of folks, some of whom come to jam, but others are singer-songwriters that come and play a few songs. Sometimes we'll have some bands that come through and want to play a few. So it's just kind of a variety.
And I've been in the I'm a little ashamed to say I've actually not been into the Rose Bowl for anything other than to step into the empty space one time. And I thought it was an interesting space, kind of a neat space. The stage, as it were, is a little on the small side, so you all kind of cram in behind this railing. How do you decide, okay, it's fine for you, so-and-so, to come play today, or do you ever say it's not fine for so-and-so to come play?
No, I've never said that. Yeah. No, everybody's welcome. Usually people just show up and then they tell me they want to play, and I try and get everybody in that wants to. And if we're up there as a group, then usually if someone feels so inclined, they'll just come on up and join us, and that's fine.
So is what happens at the Hootenanny when you do have a group of people similar to what happened within the last half hour here in this room, where somebody says, oh, do you know such and such a tune? And enough people say, yeah, and then you start playing it.
Yeah, sometimes it's kind of like that.
And other times it's kind of like,
maybe people have played on their own, you know, and worked stuff up for it sometimes. But yeah, there's a lot of that spontaneous collaboration.
We found out a little bit about Mike Compton, those of our listeners who happened to be listening last Tuesday. I guess the very shortest version is grew up in Mississippi. At least his birth was in Mississippi. I suppose musically, you more or less grew up in Nashville.
Pretty much. I think that's reasonable to say. Yeah. I lived down in Mississippi. It was mostly listening to records and following around older string band musicians that did farm work, and I sort of got acquainted with string band music from being around those guys, but really had not only played a little bit of string band music until I got out of junior college and then moved to Nashville to figure out how
to actually play with other people or to play it right.
To play better.
Yeah.
To play better. That was my only objective at the time, was to play better. Certainly not to do it for a living. Nothing else. I just wanted to move up there and jump into this fantasy that I had, that I could play with other people.
And apparently the fantasy played out well enough that you've stayed all those years.
I'm just stubborn.
Or that. Well, you played with the Nashville Bluegrass Band, which we certainly mentioned last week, a group called the Hartford String Band with John Hartford. Now, it says here the legendary John Hartford, and he's probably legendary to you guys, but not to me. It's not a, you know, I'm sort of out of the string band loop except what I've learned on this program. So, and I bet there's others listening who might say something similar. Tell me about John Hartford.
John was born in Missouri, and he spent all of his growing up years, I guess, hanging around with string band musicians, primarily fiddlers. I think he wanted to be a fiddler more than anything. Played the banjo, and he was acquainted with the Dillards, who were on the Andy Griffith Show. If nowhere else, you possibly know them from being on there. Doug Dillard being the primary one, they were going as the Darlings at that point, and standing around with their mouths open playing hillbilly music. And John moved to Nashville and became known as Radio John. He did radio shows there for a while, and he told me that he wrote 6 or 7 or 8 songs a day and went home at night and put music to them and was just sending them around. And he sent a bunch of songs out to the West Coast because I guess the Dillard family had moved out there and had landed some TV stuff. And they told John he ought to come out there. I guess around the same time he wrote the song Gentle on My Mind.
Well, that's it. That John Hartford.
Yeah, that John Hartford. And ended up making quite a chunk of money. I think he said that the first check that he got had a FedEx courier come to the door where he and his wife were still laying in bed and knocked on the door and woke him up, and he had to sign for this envelope. He opened the envelope and he said, I freaked out. I ran over and I said, look at this. Here's a check for $9,700. And she said, let me see that. And she looked at it. She said, you better read this again. It said it's $97,000. And it was before was the first check that he got. I think the song had been recorded over 400 times by different people. And
that's $97,000
1970. Yeah, it was. He ended up being on the Glenn Campbell Show. That was the theme song to the Glenn Campbell Show and the Smothers Brothers. And I believe he told me one time that he had been offered the original part for Columbo, and he turned it down because he didn't want to do that. He wanted to come back to Tennessee and pursue some more music, which he did. So, I mean, he was instrumental in forming a group that was played some music that was sort of the transitional point for string band music in the 60s and 70s, which ended up influencing groups like the Newgrass Revival and the bluegrass scene at that point in time sort of switched and went traditional and went what they call Newgrass, I guess, at that point. So, I mean, he's written a lot more songs than that. He's been a pioneer in keeping the Ryman Auditorium where it was. They were planning to tear it down, and he was real strong in the forefront of making sure that building was saved. Primarily, I think, besides it being the mother church of country music, but because it was built by a riverboat captain, John was heavily interested in everything that had to do with riverboats, old paddle wheelers. So, I mean, that's, you know, in a nutshell, that's kind of who he is.
When you say helped to, he was there at the turning point for bluegrass music, turning from what?
More of a country feel, and it started involving aspects of rock and roll and more popular music. I think it was originally more influenced by fiddle music and country music, string band blues and that kind of thing. It's what he called lifestyle reinforcement music. He made it okay for the people that were more identifying with rock and roll. And those themes in music, and they sort of turned and went that way with it.
So that's kind of the new grass?
Yes, sir. Mm.
Sam Payne, how did you is Mike somebody you just knew about because of his association with people like John Hartford, or what's your connection?
I think I found out about Mike before I realized he had played with John Hartford, but I was aware of some of these guys like David Greer that Mike's played with, and I was a fan of David Greer's music, and they made a record together that I bought, and then I got really into listening to the other stuff that Mike had done. From that, I think that was probably my first introduction for me. But
so the idea was just to see if you could get hold of him and get him to come here under any guise? Or
yeah, I guess so. I found out he was going to be in Bloomington, and originally contacted him just to see if I could take a lesson, but then it occurred to me that he didn't, when I looked at his schedule, he didn't have anything on the Monday following that gig, and so we got him to come play here.
And that's how these things work a lot. That's actually how sometimes we get people to come in and on the show here if they're if they have a day in the schedule, and sure, we could do the radio show. So, well, we're glad that it worked out for you and the Hootenanny, and then, of course, for us here to maybe bring some folks out. The Hootenanny is it's normally a free event, you know, other than
yeah, it's free tonight too. So it's a free show, but we've done pretty well with it, and so we didn't mind reinvesting some of that back into bringing somebody special to town. And
shucks.
And we'll put out some jars probably. People feel so inclined, they can make a donation, but certainly not required.
Leaving the set.
Will they be empty jars or full jars?
No, or seeded jars. Those jars are seeded with something or another. Yeah. Well, let's have us a tune. Mike, why don't we hear you do a little something on your own? We heard you know, from your recordings last time, a couple of tunes.
Why should I suffer and cry in vain? But now she's gone and I don't worry, because I'm sitting on top of the world.
Compton, live in our studio here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. He's going to be the special guest at the Urbana Hootenanny in downtown Urbana at the Rose Bowl Tavern tonight at 8 o'clock. And Live and Local today is made possible in part with support from Sweeney Brothers Carpet and Rug Gallery of Bloomington, a Norrison preferred dealer at 11 Westport Court on Bloomington's east side. Sweeney Brothers, where the beauty of a room starts with the floor. I'm probably going to betray my ignorance yet again on this show.
Cool.
When I ask if is blues normally played in a mandolin?
Mandolins do lots of things. There were some pretty big figures in the blues that played mandolins. Johnny Young was one. Yank Rochelle, Carl Martin. There's a fellow by the name of Howard Armstrong that goes by the name of Louis Bluey that played. There are others, Charlie McCoy and his brother Joe, who was married to Memphis Minnie. Let's see.
There's some wonderful names in there, just the names alone, you know.
There are a few few more. Well, one of the current ones is named Rich Del Grosso, lives down in Houston, Texas, but plays electric, a little bit of electric mandolin. Yeah, there were some really good ones. And Ry Cooter played a bit of blues on mandolin as well. Mm. He's not just a guitar player.
You said earlier that you went to Nashville, not necessarily to make it big. You didn't use that expression, but mostly just to learn to play better. Play better everything you could on the mandolin, meaning all sorts of musical styles?
No, sir. I was mainly interested in learning more about Bill Monroe's music and just being able to find out my way around on the fingerboard, because there was nobody around where I lived that played mandolin much. And certainly not any bluegrass. There were a couple of old-timers that played some, but, old-timers not meaning old-time music, but old guys that were way past their prime and could only play a couple of really simple tunes. I went up there because that's where everybody was. At least that was the closest city that I could go, major city. I mean, other than New York or someplace out in San Francisco was a big mixing point for bluegrass musicians for a long time, but most of them have moved to Nashville by now. So that was the place to be.
So did you pick up, for example, the blues, something that you didn't necessarily go with intention to learn, just by exposure or by sitting at the feet of somebody in particular or by doing like what Dustin said, he wanted to actually have a lesson with somebody?
Exposure. I've never had a lesson. I wished most all the people that I enjoy listening to are dead or pretty close to it. So it's an easy thing to get a lesson from some of the people that I like to listen to. I think possibly at one point, whenever I was in my early 20s, I decided that it was my duty to be more proficient in the blues, because I grew up in Mississippi and it's known for having blues. And I didn't feel like I knew that much about it, but I liked the sound of it. And one of the main components in Bill Monroe's music is blues. So I thought, here I go. Let's go down this road and see what happens. It feels good to do it. I don't have a bluegrass range in my voice, so you know that I can tackle some of those songs a little bit easier. And having the common ground of bluegrass makes it a little bit easier for me to play some of it. I'm not strictly a student of blues, but I do enjoy them quite a bit.
Bluegrass vocal range, meaning you want to sing higher, yeah. I mean, because that, you know, I'm not terribly knowledgeable about the blues by any stretch, but that sounded awfully authentic to me, and I certainly enjoyed it. I mean, I could easily have imagined some Delta blues guitarist playing in a similar style. In fact, sometimes I kept having to look over, and yeah, he is playing a mandolin. I see it right in front of me.
This is a white guy.
That too. Mike Compton here on Live and Local. So tonight at the Hootenanny, you'll likely play some things on your own, and then
yes, sir.
Whoever wants to jump up on stage and join in.
I think I've been assigned an hour to play by myself, and I'm not sure if it's a reward or if it's some kind of penance, but I'm going to do it.
Well, I certainly thought it would be fun to simulate the notion of a jam session, because on this show, we, in one context or another, we often talk about jamming.
Yeah.
But usually the groups that come in are groups that exist and probably have practiced
right
at some time or another. But,
well, I've practiced too.
Well, I realize that. But we're getting to the jam part now, where, I mean, I know how long you guys were in the studio, and it was about half an hour, and yeah, not even by the time you got set up. So if any practicing went on, it sure wasn't much. So I'm guessing whatever what's going to come next is a jam on some tune or another.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to do it just by myself. No, I'm going to do a little bit, hopefully these guys will let me play some with them after I'm done. I guess it's sort of a way of finding out if I can cut it.
Well, why don't we find out right now? Why don't we find out right now? Pick a tune and
up or down, you know?
Yeah.
Pick a tune and everybody jump in.
What were we just playing before?
Modally. Do I have to be in tune for this?
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. Which one are you thinking?
A.
Okay.
Well, I'm having a lot of tuning problems this week. I've just got this mandolin back from its daddy. I almost broke the headstock off of it, and it's kind of wiggly right now. It's not wanting to. It's reluctant. Let's put it that way. Ready?
Sure.
Go.
So that tune was called what?
Cluck Old Hen.
Cluck Old Hen. I heard somebody say, you know, I think I heard somebody say the tune right before you started, and you said go, and somebody else said go, and then Tom started sort of, and you were all in within a fraction of a second, and it seemed like there you were, as if you'd all played it together before. And I assume that meant that at least you all knew the tune, or everybody nods, more or less. We heard Tom Foe on the banjo, Mike Compton on mandolin, Sam Payne on guitar, and Charlie Harris on bass. At least three of them, and I assume, Tom, you'll be there at the Rose Bowl tonight as well?
I'll be there, yeah.
At 8 o'clock during the Urbana Hootenanny, which is a weekly event at 8 o'clock Monday nights. You're all, well, at least three of you are. I don't know, Charlie, do you do any teaching at all?
Not really. A couple private students I've maybe given 15 lessons.
Okay, well, then that makes you a teacher. That means everybody in the room is a teacher of some sort. And so I'm curious, particularly Tom and Sam, who I know both teach at the Community Center for the Arts in downtown Urbana, which is just not even, it's I guess, more or less across the street from the Rose Bowl.
It is exactly, across the street.
When somebody like Mike Compton comes, who's not only a teacher but also a really well-recognized player, what do you look to learn? I mean, because you're teachers, but you're also inveterate learners, I presume. What do you look to pick up from him?
Well, I'm just looking forward to hearing him play tonight. We just met this afternoon out in the parking lot before coming in here. but I hope to learn a little bit more about how he plays that mandolin.
Banjo jokes, maybe?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, do you expect?
I don't know.
I mean,
what do you mean exactly, Kevin?
Well, I don't know what I mean exactly, because I would assume that other mandolinists might pick up technique, but any other plucked string instrumentalist, I imagine, could pick up musical tips.
Maybe not so much in terms of technique, but just I learn every time I hear a fantastic musician play. I mean, I hear the space that a good musician puts in the tunes and the dialogue between the mandolin and the voice. I don't know. It's a new learning experience, I think, every time I hear a good player. But I don't know about technique. I don't know if I think Sam could probably address that a little bit better, having just worked with Mike a bit.
Yeah, I took a lesson right before we came here. I guess one thing I really admire about your playing, Mike, is your rhythmic sense. And so I was really watching his right hand and trying to maybe pick up some cues on some of the rhythmic stuff that you do with the mandolin. Even though I was playing guitar, some of that stuff can transfer.
Is there any chance you could give us an example of what you might have picked up in the last hour?
Yeah.
Mike says,
Mr. Smarty Pants know-it-all? Let's have it.
I haven't quite absorbed it yet.
Anything specific that I've stolen from Mike was prior to today, just
now,
from
this
listening
is not
to recordings and stuff.
I don't mean to imply in the question that you've learned it well. But, I mean, just to give an idea, because, you know, I hear people talk about space, rhythmic space, or musical space, or
here I was watching a YouTube video of Mike doing a tune called the East Tennessee Blues, and I stole this little. That's not it. It's that little idea from the mandolin. I put it on the guitar. That would be an example of something.
So that's instrument.
That's a Mike Compton lick that maybe, I don't know, that might be a Bill Monroe lick for all I know, but that's a...
So it's a musical lick.
Musical idea that I stole.
It has a few different sources. How about this?
Thank you. So do we just get a glimpse into what a Mike Compton lesson might look like?
I spent hours figuring that out before I ever met Mike today. That's something I'd worked on prior to the lesson. So no, I didn't pick that up. I did learn more about the tune from Mike, and he showed me some interesting variations and shared some of the history and some of the different versions that he had drawn from.
When did you, what made you decide to get into teaching, Mike?
It was necessary.
To make money?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
It was a real something that I hadn't done, and it was it's unknown, it's a little terrifying. I guess a little and terrifying are not not the, they sort of don't go together. A little terrifying or a lot not scary. I needed to make some extra money doing it, and I thought, well, maybe I could give lessons or something. It was just a vague thing. It wasn't as if I felt drawn to be a teacher. But over the years of doing it quite a bit, it's gotten easier and it makes more sense. And I've talked to quite a few teachers who've all say pretty much the same thing. Act like you know, number one. Act like you know what you're talking about because you do. Number two, find as many different ways of getting the same information across as possible. Give examples. Everybody learns differently. And I give lessons on the internet when I'm at home, about 20 people a week, and they're all different. And I started to notice that I could play what I play better because I was having to take things apart into pieces and chunks where the curious people that were curious about the style and wanting to know more about it were able to digest smaller chunks of it and then put it back together and make music out of it. So it's not as scary as it used to be, and it's easier now to do it. But I mean, originally I didn't do it because I was called to teach. I it was financially something that I needed to do.
And I assume that by now it's something you continue to do, not only because it helps financially, but because...
Yeah, that's not really the draw for it anymore. I over the years... From doing it, I've come to know quite a few people who I'm reasonably good friends with, you know, most of them long distance. But I would miss the interaction that I have with them if I didn't have the opportunity to see them once or a week or every other week. But now they've become friends, and I would miss it if I didn't have that.
You find that lessons sometimes turn into miniature jam sessions?
They do. They do. I mean, that's one way people learn. It's easier for you to say, okay, well, here's a bit of information. If I was in a room with you and your friends and some of my friends and these guys, and a concept or an idea came through, there would be a few people in there that would pick their instruments up and go, okay, and just start running the idea around. And there would be people in there saying, shh, 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 stop, stop, I can't hear him. But the people that do that just need to, you know, run through the moves so they can get an idea before it escapes them, just so you can have that, you know. Just find out where it is and do that. And, you know, if there's nobody there to tell them to stop, then, you know, other people start joining in, and before you know it, it's a jam session.
Well, especially where you're talking about an art form that is learned almost exclusively by rote.
Right.
You don't really, I mean, until you get it under your fingers, you don't have any idea. You probably haven't learned anything unless you got a great memory.
That's mostly an oral tradition. Old-time scene, that I think it's more so than that, although there are some people that are really academic about it. I think the old-time scene is probably more so that way than bluegrass is.
I think any tradition is oral tradition. I mean, I think if you're taking violin lessons or piano lessons and you're learning Mozart still, you're learning by watching your teacher. And I think most of what happens in a lesson is absorbing the way your teacher's moving their hands and, you know, and responding to the music. I think that's 75% of what happens in any lesson, no matter what the genre. And so maybe that gets back to what you were asking before, Kevin. What do you learn? Well, I think you absorb it. When you're watching a good musician, you just absorb the way their, you know, their kinetic, you know, force with the instrument. You watch somebody move, you watch somebody interact with the instrument, and that's how you learn. I think that's where most learning goes on.
And how good a student, and especially how good a performer one turns out to be, probably has a lot to do with not only do you pay attention, but especially how well do you simply absorb.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people
just don't absorb
and then aren't going to be able to
reproduce. Which is, I think, one of the things about having somebody like Mike be a teacher. I mean, just, you know, somebody who's just really at home with that axe is great for students at any level.
Mike Compton's going to be playing at the Urbana Hootenanny tonight, solo for about an hour, and then with other folks who jump up on stage with him. That starts at 8, I may have just said, at the Rose Bowl in downtown Urbana. These folks are live with us here on Live and Local on FM 90.9, where our broadcast is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, preserving our nation's music heritage at the University of Illinois, now featuring new exhibits entitled On the Road Again, Cruising Coast to Coast with America's Music. More information is available at sousaarchives.org. I think it's time for another tune of some sort or another.
Kevin feels a tune coming on.
I feel a tune coming on from other people.
A little rumble.
I feel the need to listen is what I need to do here.
Are we still in A?
We are, but we don't have to be.
Oh, well, we I mean, that's cool. What right. what tuning do you play Bill Cheatham in?
Let's do it in A.
A? Cool. Well, just happened to have an A chord here.
All right.
And is this one that you feel really confident about kicking off?
Sure. you want to start with it? That section?
Yes.
This one we actually did not practice at all.
So. Oh, so this is a serious jam then, all right.
Well, I mean, there's a body of material that, floats around often enough that usually there's something that we can find that with some common ground. You know, this just happens to be one of them.
We didn't practice it, but we've each played it.
Separately, so we'll see what happens.
Separately, together at different venues. I'm not scared.
So we start with that section.
I like that part. Thank you.
And that one was called?
Bill Cheatham.
Bill Cheatham. I did hear you mention that. Mike Compton on the mandolin, Tom Foe on banjo, Sam Payne on guitar, and Charlie Harris on the bass. They'll all be at the Urbana Hootenanny tonight at 8 o'clock at the Rose Bowl Tavern in downtown Urbana. I'm going to take a little break here and mention some other events that listeners can go see and hear live in our listening area over the next couple of days. And then maybe we can hear another solo from Mike and then another group effort to take us on out. If that's all right, if you want to talk amongst yourselves or else just think out loud or something. So besides the Hootenanny tonight, coming up at 6 o'clock, jazz pianist Donnie Heitler will be at Minichi's at the Crossing in Champaign, 6 o'clock tonight. Tomorrow at 8 o'clock at the Iron Post, a jazz group called Counter Culture, that's spelled C-O-W-N-ter Culture, Mike Finoli on sax and others, Iron Post in Urbana tomorrow night at 8. Fiesta de Libros with the group called Del Sur, that means Fiesta of Books, I think, with Del Sur at Champaign Public Library, in of course in Champaign, tomorrow evening at 7:15. The Illinois Modern Ensemble will be at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts tomorrow evening at 7:30. That's the new music group at the University of Illinois. Steve Anderson and Laurie Bernard will be at Clark Bar in Champaign tomorrow evening at 6:30. And it's Jason Parrish's acoustic jam at the Rose Bowl in Urbana tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. Eastern Illinois University Music Theater will present The Little Shop of Horrors starting Wednesday at the Dowden Fine Arts Center in Charleston, Wednesday at 7:30, and that continues through the week. Bob Watson and Matt Stewart will be at Clark Bar in Champaign, Wednesday evening, 6:30. And the In Your Ear Big Band will be at the Iron Post in Urbana, Wednesday evening at 6. And finally, the Hungarian State Folk Ensemble will be at the Krannert Center in Urbana, Wednesday evening at 7 o'clock. Tuning continues, which means they're almost there, presumably.
Okay, this is about as close as it gets. Let me play you a sort of an oddball thing from North Carolina. Thank you.
Well, since you used the term, I'll just borrow it back that I can't exactly articulate the ways in which that did seem a bit of an oddball tune, but from your professional point of view, why did you call it that? What makes it odd, and what was it?
It's a blues tune. It was played in the black community around North Carolina, I guess around the turn of the century, 1900. It was collected by, I don't even remember who it was. I got it off of a college website. It's a blues, probably sounds like it could have been played on a reed flute or fiddle, probably, and probably had some words. I mean, the guy that I got it from said, that's a tune that they used to play around over North Carolina. He said, I don't care about it too much, but lots of folks seems to like it pretty good. But he liked it enough to learn it, you know.
And apparently so did you. What appeals to
you? It's creepy. It's just creepy. Good creepy.
So you're thinking we get close to Halloween, so an oddball creepy tune needs to be in your repertoire?
It sounds like there's whoever wrote it was real lonely and possibly somewhat disturbed about whatever had gone on during his day, you know. I think it sounds like something that probably used to have lyrics, and as scary sounding as it is, I don't know if I would even want to know what the words are.
So you apparently haven't made any up yet yourself.
No, I'm not even going to make the effort. I'm just trying to play that slippery, slidey stuff that's in it.
So does that make it you mostly picked it up as sort of a technical challenge for yourself?
That's one of the reasons, yes, sir. This sliding around on mandolin, I don't think is usually something that people look at it as being part of the style, at least not that to that degree. It's some of the blues guys did, but that's more of a fiddle thing, I think.
So another example of Mike Compton continuing to learn so that he can presumably pass on, at least in part, pass on some of these things. Mike Compton joining the Urbana Hootenanny tonight. He'll be playing solo right at 8 o'clock?
Yes, sir.
And then anybody else who wants to join?
Yeah, actually,
can jump in.
Correction, the event starts at 8 o'clock, right? And Mike's playing at 9.
Playing at 9, okay, very good.
Come at 8. You feel so inclined, and I think you'll see Tom and I play a couple tunes, and with Robin Kierten.
Robin Kierten's gonna play too.
Okay,
and you'll see Charlie playing with a stripped down version of his group Bones, Jugs, and Harmony. It's gonna be him and J.P. Gogan and Cody Jensen are gonna do a few beforehand. So there will be some other good music happening before Mike starts.
And we had those guys on the show not very long ago, down at the Rose Bowl Tavern downtown Urbana, 8 o'clock. It all starts tonight. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. And tomorrow we'll have a feature on the show on Benjamin Britten, a symposium that is happening at Illinois State University later on in the week. We'll hear all about that and presumably some of Britten's music as well. Our broadcast today is made possible with support from PACE Incorporated, Center for Independent Living, People with Disabilities, Their Family and Friends, Promoting Accessibility and Independence. PACE Inc. is a proud member of Community Shares of Illinois, a choice for payroll deductions at work, on the web at cs-il.org. This is 90.9 WYNL-FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music, and more for Central Illinois. WYNL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. Take us out with a tune.
We've got a translator even. That's cool. Do we have subtitles?
We don't.
whistle blew.